Aloha, my name is Jenna Ishii, and I'm an apprentice navigator on board Hokulea, and I also work for Polynesian Voyaging Society as the education coordinator, and I'm also Nainoa Thompson's assistant.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, were you there when this Malama Honua worldwide voyage idea was hatched? Do you have any idea? Okay, how did that happen?
Yeah, so I was in Japan in 2007 when Hokulea came to Japan. And actually, the idea was born in 1992 with our astronaut, Lacey Veach. Lacey was from Hawaii. He flew Space Shuttle Columbia. And in 1992, looking over the Hawaiian Islands, when he came back, he told Nainoa's father, take Hokulea around the world, you know, see what you can learn from the Earth, and bring it back to Hawaii. And those gifts from Hawaii can be gifts back to the Earth. And that was basically the whole genesis of the idea of taking Hokulea around the world. This planet is in trouble and it needs help, and see what we can do. But it wasn't until 2007 when our leadership came to Japan and saw that people from all walks of life that did not speak English were coming in hundreds to touch Hokulea. And they said, you know, maybe it's time. Maybe Hokulea can do something, because she stands for peace and she stands for aloha. And in 2008, they agreed again. All of our voyaging leaders said, we're going to do this. And actually, that's when I came home to Hawaii and started volunteering with Polynesian Voyaging Society. So I was lucky to be part of the initial planning stages of, are we crazy? You know, really? Should we do
that
this?
That did occur to you then.
Yeah. A lot of people, you know, some people were worried. Why are you taking Hokulea from our kids in Hawaii? What if something happens to her? She's the only Hokulea we have. And so I watched, you know, our leadership wrestle and make sure this was going to be worth the risk. And I think every single decision Nainoa makes and our leadership makes is making sure Hokulea comes home safe, our crew comes home safely, and that all the people that have prayed for these canoes, that this voyage is going to far outweigh the risk that we took to go around the world.
I was looking back, 2007, five Hawaiian navigators were, I guess, elevated to the level of po.
Yes. Yeah, in the island of Satawal, where Papa Mau, our greatest navigation teacher, is from, he passed on that very sacred ceremony and tradition to actually 11 po navigators throughout the Pacific, but five specifically from Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Those five from Hawaii, Chad Babayan, Milton Bertelman, Bruce Blankenfeld, Chad Paishan, and Nainoa Thompson.
Yeah, so they've, you know, of the last 42 years that Hokulea's sailed and Mau taught, you can see how tough navigation is, because there are five in Hawaii that have really mastered the art of wayfinding, and they'll never even call themselves a master until they die, which is the way Mau said it too.
Hmm. You are now in this, you're in the genealogy now.
Yeah, it's a big kuleana to take on to learn navigation, and they take it very seriously, making sure that whoever they pass this very sacred knowledge to is going to perpetuate it. So there's a few generations now, older than me, actually, like Ka'iulani Murphy, who just found Tahiti on Hokulea. She's been training with Nainoa for probably 10 more years than I have. And so each po navigator took it upon themselves to seek out next generations to make sure this art survives and thrives.
What do they look for in a navigator?
That's a great question. I mean, just from my observation, when you look at those that are learning under them, they have the values. It's all about the values that you hold. It's that you're there for the bigger purpose, for your community, that you are observant, you work hard. It's not about you. It's more about, Mau said, you know, when he gives you po is the light, and the light is love. And your job is to go out to sea and bring gifts back to your people. So it's much deeper than finding islands and navigating. It's about the lessons you learn while you're out at sea and then how you can bring those back to your community. So those are the kinds of people that I think take on this responsibility.
What sciences and knowledge are combined for this discipline?
You know, when you think about it, the Polynesia is the biggest nation on Earth, and it took... They were the greatest scientists and explorers and mathematicians on the planet at their time. And so when you start breaking it down and you're like, wow, I'm doing math, I'm doing physics, I'm doing astronomy, you need every single part of this world of the modern day sciences and the ancient ways of looking at nature to find your way. And I know he says you make about 1,000 observations a day and you make 2 decisions a day. At sunrise and sunset, how far you think you've gone, where you've come from, and where you're going. So it's a pretty dynamic process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gee, you've kind of put us on the boat there for just a second. I wish I could look into your eyes and see what you've seen, Jenna.
You know, it's been amazing that folks like Nainoa and Bruce and Onohi, Shorty, Kalepa, they stay with us and they'll voyage with us. Nainoa says, I can teach you everything, you know, with a book. I can give you all the materials that we learned these last 40 years, but it's not till you're on the deck of the canoe watching me, watching how I stand, watching how I sleep, that you'll really understand what it's like to navigate. And so over the years, we've been really lucky to have these deep sea voyages with them. And slowly they start to give us our own challenges and kind of step back. But they've guided us along the way that we're not scared. We're excited and ready for the next challenge. And they're always there, you know, if we have questions and so forth.
Well, how do you stand?
Well, what really helps is when, you know, imagine that you have no stars in the sky and it's complete cloud cover. So if you stand with your 2 feet firmly, you know, like bracing yourself and looking forward, you start
feeling... Where on the boat?
On the canoe, yeah. So anywhere on the canoe, okay. But looking forward, you can start feeling the motion of how the 2 hulls are moving through the ocean and how the wind is coming across the canoe and how the swells are moving through the canoe. And the best navigators, like Papa Mao, they could be sleeping in a hull and know where they were going by the motion of the canoe. So we're not there yet, but I know, you know... navigators like Nainoa and Bruce, they can do this without the stars for a long period of time.
By reading the currents and swells through their body.
Yeah, it's more like feeling the motion of the swells, the predominant swell. And what you do is when you have a cue like the sun or the moon or a star, you know exactly where that is. And you can kind of place it. We call it a Hawaiian star compass. It's this mental construct of 32 points around the canoe, and you place whatever you know for sure, whether it's a celestial body, then you place the wind that morning or the swell that morning, and you say, okay, this morning I think the wind is coming out of the north and the predominant swell is coming out of the east, very simply. And then you kind of set your course for the day. And if all the cues in the sky go away, hopefully you can keep that course with the predominant swell and wind direction.
What if those change?
They do, and they change all the time. So if you have no more cues left and you don't feel confident anymore, you can close your sails and wait for a sign. And that's a good lesson in life, that you don't always have all the answers, and sometimes you have to just stop and wait, and nature will give you a sign. You just have to be patient.
What signs are you waiting for?
Usually, I mean, the sun is your best friend because it's the biggest star. It's rising about 12 hours apart and setting, and that's where you kind of get focused. At sunrise, you make a lot of decisions for how you're going to sail that day and which direction you're going in. And at sunset, you decide what the weather's going to look like that night, and you work with your crew on the plan. And so the sun is the best thing that can come out and show you your way.
Uh-huh. And you look for birds, look for other creatures?
This is all based on tropical navigation. But once we get to a specific island, and we study a lot of the seabirds, once we left the Pacific, things were very foreign to us. And so we did a lot of research, like for Galapagos, what kind of seabirds are coming from land and are going to tell us that they're going home, because they might not be the same birds that we have in Hawaii. Same with the navigators who were looking for Rapa Nui, you know. So you have to know the place. You have to know what kind of birds they have. You don't want to just follow any bird, because it could take, the Kolea bird could take you to Alaska. And so there's this one bird that we use, the Manuoku, the white fairy tern, in Hawaii. And it only goes about 120 miles out to sea. And it goes fishing for its babies in the morning. And usually at sunset, when we think we're in the area of our latitude, we start looking for these little white, they look like butterflies on the horizon. And the more we see of them, the more they start aiming in a line together, it'll always take you to the island. It's pretty amazing. So yeah, you start really getting close to the sea life, the birds, and then you start seeing, you know, when you get close to the island, sometimes there'll be pods of dolphins and, you know, escorting you into shore. It's an amazing thing.
But you're kind of pointing out as well that there are days of without that in fact, maybe the majority of the time there isn't a whole lot of signposts waiting out there in the ocean.
Yeah, I mean, it's all dead reckoning. You know, you can't measure your longitude with the stars. So you have to keep track of how far you thought you've gone east or west. And the worst thing that could happen is that you're downwind of your target. So we always try and stay upwind of our target, and we measure the latitude using stars. And then once we know for sure we think we're at that latitude, then we'll decide to turn towards our target. That's kind of the sailing. When you're going north to south, that's kind of how we do it. And if you're sailing east to west, it's a whole different kind of plan.
Based on? What's that based on?
Well, you know, what we do is we make a sail plan ahead of time. And we look at all the different factors. It's really hard to measure current. So we'll actually factor current into the sail plan. But for example, when we left the Pacific, we just did this, one of the routes from Panama to Galapagos. Uh-huh. And there's these huge currents coming through the equator, because you're basically going to the equator. Mm-hmm. So we basically had to factor in these currents that we don't have in the Pacific. And we had to factor in the fact that the winds are actually going to swirl in these doldrum kind of areas. So we had all these different scenarios, and you just kind of, you have the sail plan in your mind, and so that when you get out there, it's all mapped out in your mind, and then you make the decisions upon what's really happening.
How do you spend your time on the boat?
Well, when you're navigating, it's just observing 24/7, and the crew is amazing. They really try and help you out. So when you're navigating, you don't steer, you don't set sails, unless it's all hands on deck. But usually you're kind of a little bit on your own, and each watch that comes up, they come up for about 4 hours. You work with them. You say, okay, guys, this is the course. This is where we want to go. And most crew members, they know enough about navigation, how it works, that they can really help you out. They say, okay, we're going to hold this line for the next 4 hours till the next guys come on. And your job is to just keep making adjustments with your crew.
Uh-huh. I understand you don't get much sleep.
Yeah, usually, I mean, if you look at folks like Nainoa, he'll only sleep for like 2 hours a day max. You know, he'll take cat naps. So we try and mimic that. It's really hard.
Oh,
you get really delirious, and that's why they don't want you to do, you know, the hard work, the hard labor as much as possible, because it'll exhaust you. And sometimes you're in the hot, hot sun you're at the equator. And I've been seasick. I had a migraine. I think I had heat exhaustion. And I was trying to navigate in Samoa. And you just have to pull yourself together. But there are those moments where it just takes you to your deepest part of yourself, where you have to kind of pull through. But I love that. I love that moment, actually. It's when you feel most alive.
It's good you feel that way, Jenna. But even, you know, people saying, okay, we'll hold this for 4 hours with, I don't know how they can say they'll do that when there's really, how are they judging where they are?
Right. Well, the hardest time to navigate is the middle of the day. So the sun's directly above you. I mean, really from about 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. or even 3 p.m., the sun can't tell you much of anything. And so the crew members are actually, sometimes they're steering backwards. They're looking at the swell coming through the canoe. They're looking at the wind coming off the canoe. And those are really the cues they're using. Sometimes you can hold a distant cloud for maybe 15 minutes. So I know it teaches us some tricks because you have no stars, you can't use the sun. And so that is a hard. And then what you do is as it starts to get closer to sunset or sunrise, then you start getting a lot more accurate. So you can give yourself a little bit of error.
How do you gauge it, though? Do you have a stick that you hold up?
Yeah, we calibrate our hands ahead of time. So what the system that was created is that you kind of look, you can basically, it's like a really cool math problem. So you look at a wall and you stand a certain couple steps back and you measure the degrees 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to about 20. And you put your hand out. So if you see the film Moana and she's putting her hand out, she's actually measuring the degrees from the horizon to whatever you have, a rising star, what that degree is. And so we, ahead of time, everyone calibrates their hands. And each degree is 4 minutes. So every time the star rises, 1 degree, 2 degree, 3 degrees, that's 4 minutes later, 8 minutes later, and so on. So you can tell time using your hands. That's how we keep track of when people switch their watches. We measure the stars traveling. There's a lot of things you can do with your hands.
No kidding.
Yeah. So everyone's like, what is Moana doing when she's putting her hand out and she's navigating? Well, she's measuring the stars and she's measuring latitude. I'm not sure what she's doing in the movie, but that's how we use our hands.
Any other incredible insights that you want to tell us that how you do this darn thing?
I think the more I navigate, the more I know how much I don't know and the more you want to learn. And it's like anything in life. It's you just get you start picking away at the layers of what the master navigators in any culture knew. And I spend most of my time on the computer now and I barely get time to go out and that's why I try and go surfing every day and just before all work starts, just go outside, look what's going on. But our generation, I don't think we get to be in nature 24/7. So when you're on a voyage, it's a really special time.
I mean, I just imagine the sun beating down on you all day long, Jenna. How do you guys do that? Where can you go?
Yeah, there's no roof on Hokulea. It's completely exposed. During the daytime, hopefully our sails are up, so you get a little bit of shade. But when it's high noon, there's no shade. And so I get a pareo, and I wet it with salt water, and I put it over my head. And that basic, and, you know, you're just, you have your, whatever clothes you have on, you get it wet. The deck gets really hot. We throw salt water overboard, and we just try and keep each other cool. And as soon as you're done, our captains say get rest, so that you can be ready for the next shift. So, yeah, midday is the hardest time for me.
And you sleep in the hulls?
We do. Well, the navigator does not sleep in the hulls. We have, like, two mesh kind of sitting areas because you don't want to get too comfortable or fall asleep for too long. But most of the crew members, they switch out. So we have 10 bunks, and we sleep on they're like pool mats. So it's pretty comfortable, especially when you're really tired. But it doesn't fit. If you're like taller than 5.5 feet, you're kind of scrunched in there. So our big guys, they have to kind of curl up to sleep inside.
And how's cooking done, or is any cooking
done? Well, we fish every day if we can. It's been interesting on this worldwide voyage. We've been in a lot of marine protected areas because we want to bring the awareness of what people are doing to protect their oceans. So we've gone to UNESCO World Heritage Sites. So we don't fish in those areas. But when we can, we have lines out. We just put a lure out. And if we catch a fish, it'll feed us for a day. We bring extra provisions. We have a cook on board and everyone helps out. That's the most fun time, is just preparing meals. And if you catch a fish, everyone celebrates, and sometimes we'll send it to the canoe next to us or the escort boat. So that's what keeps your spirits up, looking forward. What's the next meal? And, if you have really good chefs on board.
I mean, everything's raw, though, or granola, or what?
Yeah, so we've tried a lot. I mean, the diet has changed so much from the early 70s, but we have a whole team, logistics committee, that they're volunteers the last 3 years, and they've planned our menus. They've worked with nutritionists. They've worked with our medical officers to make sure we have really balanced meals. We have fresh food for maybe 2 weeks, and after that, you know, you have dehydrated veggies and dried fruit, and you know, they really worked hard to give us an amazing menu, and they're all volunteers.
Jeez.
Yeah.
As is everyone, right?
Yeah, everyone that sails is a volunteer. We have a tiny staff at PVS, and so your kuleana, when you get chosen to go on a leg, we fundraise, you know, for this whole voyage. So by the time you go on a leg, you know, Hawaiian Airlines flies us around the world. We couldn't go anywhere without these flights. And then usually what our team does is we plan where the crew's going to stay, where they're going to get hosted. We ask communities if they can help us out, you know, because that's more fun, too. You don't want to be staying in hotels when you're around the world. You want to stay with the communities. So crew members, their give back is to go and teach. And so every crew member, before they went on a leg of the voyage, we asked them to adopt their local school in their community. And so the goal was that, yes, we want to reach the thousands and the millions and bring awareness to what's happening with our planet, but we also want to go deep and have some, you know, your local kids in your school have a hero to look up to. So a lot of crew members, that's been one of the best part of this whole journey, is getting to know 30 kids, you know, that look up to you as a literal hero, and you come back every time you voyage, and you know, we do Google Hangouts from the ocean with them, and we send back video links, and that's how we've gotten our kids in Hawaii to feel like they're part of the voyage.
What are some schools that have participated in that way?
Well, we started a charter school. Actually, I know I started a charter school with Robert Witt called Malama Honua Public Charter School. So one idea was, how do we, you know, how do we make the core purpose of education caring for the earth? That simple. Caring for your community, caring for your family, and caring for our planet. And so that actually started, that school in Waimanalo, started because of the genesis of the worldwide voyage. But other schools, we never wanted to tell them what to do. We said, we're going on this voyage. It's about Malama Honua, taking care of the earth. Here's the ways that we're going to be learning about the earth, and we hope you'll join us. Working with our, you know, DOE, our Department of Education, the University of Hawaii, Kamehameha Schools, the independent schools, we said, how do we get all of our schools in Hawaii and all of our kids access to this voyage? So over the last couple of years, some schools like Lunalilo Elementary, their whole school adopted the voyage and adopted a crew member, Maui Tautaha, and they created blogs, and every grade level has a theme. So it's been the gamut of a whole school adopting the voyage to one class, to one teacher. It's been pretty amazing to watch what's happened.
Super awesome. Yeah. Well, that just lays the groundwork for where the whole mission goes, right?
That's the whole thing is, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, the worldwide voyage is ending, and what's next? And it's actually the starting point for this whole movement. Not that we've created something, but we've just catalyzed awareness and excitement that people are already doing this. And Hokulea is the perfect, a microphone to amplify what's already happening in our communities. And one cool thing, you know, our education team, and they're all volunteers too, they helped us research all the stories of hope in every port. And so we would get together once a week after school, and we say, okay, guys, we're going to research Bali, we're going to research South Africa, we're going to research the Virgin Islands, and help us connect with the local people and let us know, if you had, you know, 5 days in this port, what are those stories of communities working together to crack the code, to solve the world's biggest issues, to bridge indigenous wisdom, you know, and to honor.
What are some great ideas that you saw out there,
man.
Jenna?
So when we went, one of the first ports, like outside the Pacific, was Australia. So we were so excited to visit the Great Barrier Reef. Mm-hmm. And we know it's huge. It's the size of Italy. So to protect the reef, the government can't do it alone. So they started a program called the Reef Guardian Schools Program. And every public school that lines the Great Barrier Reef, 310 schools, they have committed to protect the Great Barrier Reef. It's so simple. So in their curriculum, they're growing, aquarium fish that people might be taking from the reef. They're restoring their watersheds up if they're up Mauka, or they're working directly with the reef and the government. And we're so impressed. We're like, you know, our kids are doing this in Hawaii, but this is a full nationwide, you know, system-wide effort to get kids to say the reef is the most important thing we're looking at. How do we get our kids to be the stewards and future ambassadors? That was one huge example that we came home with. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. And just providing a megaphone for some of these terrific ideas along the way, right?
Exactly.
Does living in Hawaii mean anything different, you know, after being involved in this?
I work with Nailoa a lot and kind of bounce ideas off of him. And he, every time we come back from a different place, no matter how extraordinary their people are or their ecosystems are, he still says there's no place like Hawaii. Hawaii has this culture of kindness and aloha. We have one of the most amazing ecosystems on earth. We have our ancestors, you know, 2,000 years ago lived sustainably, completely without importing fossil fuels or food. We have all the answers to live on these islands. And that's the whole reason for going around the world is, you know, what can Hawaii learn from our past, learn from the world, and then share those gifts back? But really, I think there's no place like Hawaii, honestly.
If you think back to some time when you were on the canoe, what comes to mind? You know?
I mean, I've been so blessed to have so many opportunities to sail on board Hokulea. And I think it's just the people that come together. You sometimes you don't know each other too well when you get put on the canoe, because we have so many different reasons for having people on board. And they come from all over the world. But by the time, you know, is that day that you find the island and you finally realize that your voyage is coming to a close, and you look around the people on the deck with you and you've become this family and you'll have those relationships forever. And you've pulled that island or that landmass or that country out of the sea together. I think those are probably the most precious moments that you'll never forget.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Jenna. It's really been fun talking with you.
Thank you for having me.
I guess I'm thinking about life on board a little bit more and how we can make it so real for people, you know? What did people talk about?
Well, imagine, you know, when we go into classrooms and we talk about life on board Hokulea, we have that basically, we say, look around you, and if you could survive with the 12 people sitting next to you for 30 days in, you know, basically a 60-foot long, 20-foot wide area, that's your voyaging canoe. And so if you simplify it like that, you say, oh my gosh, I have to pick my crew members really wisely. And when you're out there, you don't have the modern distractions of TV or video games or your cell phone or iPad or whatever. We have guitar and ukulele, so usually somebody knows how to sing, or we just try. People are telling jokes all the time. You try and keep the mood light because there can be some serious or tiring situations. There's a lot of patience. That's probably the biggest thing I've ever learned, is just to calm down and have plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G. The plan A is probably never going to be the plan. And the more you go voyaging, you realize that. You just go with the flow. It makes you such a patient, compassionate, caring person, because you're there. If somebody's down and sick, you just become your best self. I don't know what it is about the canoe. You have to make sure everyone is at their best. And that's what I love about being on board any voyaging canoe, is that when I was really seasick and I could barely do work, my crew members, they stepped up for me. And then as soon as you're feeling better, you know, you want to step up for them. And then when you get back on land, it truly makes you a better person. You know, the more you remember what it felt like on that small deck and you can bring that back to your community, I think it's made me think way more about the world around me than just myself. So those are kind of the moments where you're just hanging out, talking story, listening, you know, really listening to other people's stories, and you have time to listen. You have time to tell stories. You have time to journal and reflect. There's a lot of time out there, and there's some downtime. Not so much when you're navigating, but sometimes when you're a crew member, I like sometimes just being a crew member because you do your shift and you work hard, and sometimes you have like an hour to yourself just to stare out into the horizon and take it all in.
Wow. Thanks so much, Jenna. It's really fun talking with you. So the summit, though. Yeah, you want people to go to that, right?
Yeah, so this whole week of homecoming is about celebrating on Saturday, coming to Magic Island. Everyone's welcome. And what we decided is to have this summit for the community on Sunday, Monday, and some parts of Tuesday at the Convention Center. Hokulea is coming under the bridge of the Alawai Canal. She'll be right there at the bottom of the stairs for canoe tours every day from 10 to 5. It's open to the public. There will be about 100 or so exhibitors of all our people from around the world in Hawaii that are doing things to take care of the earth. There'll be keiki activities. Sunday is a youth summit for kids ages 5 to 25 to share their inspiring stories of what are they doing to take care of the planet. And Monday is the inspirational speaker series that you can register online. It's open to the public. And we invited some of our great navigators around the world that we've met, like Sylvia Earle and Archbishop Tutu's daughter and President Ramingasau of Palau and the Ocean Elder, Jean-Michel Cousteau. And they're going to be kind of sharing what they're doing, what they're seeing around the world, and why they're inspired by Hokulea's voyage and where they think the Earth is moving in the future and how we can help. So that's going to be an awesome day. So, yeah, we invite you to come down Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and check us out. Hokulea.com is where you can find all the information.
You guys are such overachievers.
Yeah, go big or go home.
Thank you. Yeah. We got them.
Thank you.
It was really inspiring and wonderful.